Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Wandering One podcast, brought to you by Wandering One Studios and yours truly, your host, Link Flores. Hello, how are you? How have you been? Thank you for being patient with me. The last week or so has been pretty hectic, so I figured I'd go ahead and thank you guys all for being patient. Thank you for not giving up on me. I knew I was going to get around to this eventually, and I will be making more announcements about stuff like this, hopefully in the future, via social media. I've got some plans that I want to put into motion, but it's just going to take a little while to get things sorted. That said, thank you all for all your support, for listening and for sharing the podcast, for joining the Patreon, just following over there for free and checking out the free stuff that's there. Thank you especially to the patrons who are paying their $3 a month to get some bonus content. This last couple of months has been pretty tumultuous, to say the least, but we're working on it. We're going to get there. We're going to have another bonus episode specifically and exclusively for paid patrons over at patreon.com/WanderingOneStudios. Thank you all for being over there, sending messages. We had a great episode last time around. Very cathartic. Also very fun to answer another question from the community. So please feel free to write in over there. Just, you know, make sure you address it to me and let me know if you want me to read your name or not. And then you could be part of a special bonus episode of the Wandering One podcast. What else do we have? As always, yes, you can check me out over on Twitch at twitch.tv/linkib. I'll be doing some gameplay, and hopefully we'll get back into doing some art before the end of the year. It's just been super nuts, and the motivation's been kind of low, but things are starting to turn a corner, I think. And yeah, I think getting a little bit of energy back, a little bit of peace of mind, if things aren't completely 100%, at least we're getting to a better spot. I think that's what I'm looking for. There's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. There's definitely some more optimism and an increased sense of just, I don't know how you'd put it. Maybe like a rejuvenation, sort of a rejuvenation of the spirit, just to be like, yeah, I got this. I can still do this. And to get back out there and to keep swinging, you know? And it's been, like I said, it's been kind of trying, not to go into too much detail. Some people know and some people don't, but we had some family medical stuff to deal with over the last week or so. And so that's why the podcast hasn't been on time. That's why it hasn't come out yet until, you know, when you're hearing this, which will likely be Monday. If everything goes well, it'll be Monday, November 4th, when you get to hear this, which means it is just one day before the season finale of America, or more notably, Election Day, Super Tuesday, whatever you want to call it, November 5th. So you're getting two podcasts, essentially. They're going to be practically back-to-back. So congratulations, I guess. Like, they'll be within days of each other as opposed to waiting an entire week. So I guess in a weird way, this is kind of a blessing, you know? I get to pull the content blocks a little closer and give you guys a little something extra to listen to. And this one's going to be a little lengthy as well because there's a lot going on. There's a lot that's happening. And we are just around the corner from finding out, as Gabriel Iglesias would say, the wonderful comedian, who's going to run this bitch? It's going to be a pretty interesting... It's been a pretty interesting election season, let's be honest. It's going to be a very interesting next couple of days here in the United States. So without further ado, let's get to it. Let's talk some stuff, man. I'm going to kind of bounce around a little bit. You know how this podcast goes. Things are just weird and wild all over the place. You know what? Let's start off. Let's get the gridiron gripes out of the way. We know we're going to talk about the heavy stuff later. Let's talk about something a little bit lighter, first of all. I say lighter stuff, but, you know, it's football, so it's always kind of serious business. Because I missed it, and a couple games have already happened since, you know, like I said, this is Monday, and I'm doing this just before the Monday night football game is going to come on, which was scheduled to be, I mean, looks like it might actually be a pretty solid one. If I remember correctly, we're looking at, Bucks and Chiefs tonight at 8:15 p.m. Eastern. I got a feeling that's going to be a pretty interesting game. I don't think the Bucks are in a position to really take it to the Chiefs, who are currently 7-0, and they're definitely world beaters right now. But, you know, I don't think the Chiefs have really had, I don't think they really had their mettle tested. I mean, granted, I know that they're champions and all that jazz. That's great and that's wonderful and that's beautiful. But I think if you get some sweet chin music on you, it's gonna change up your tune a little bit, you know? I'm not saying that they're slouches by any stretch of the imagination. Far from it, you know? And I'm not saying they haven't had some damn good games, you know? But it just feels like, with the exception of, I mean, just looking back at their schedule so far this year, I think with the exception of perhaps the Ravens and the Falcons, I don't think they've really played a team that's really tested them as much as they should have. I mean, they just barely beat the Cincinnati Bengals, who were 0-2 when they met earlier this year or earlier this season. So I don't know that they're really like going to be as, I don't think they're going to be as potent if they run up against, you know, if they were to perhaps run up against the Lions or, you know, somebody of that stature, you know. I mean, even the Ravens were a bit of a kind of a walk for them, but it just makes me wonder, like, what do they really have in the tank going forward in this season? That's, I mean, again, I'm not shitting on them. I'm not saying that they're a bad team. They're a great team. It's very clear that they're a great team. But, I mean, I just have a concern that maybe they'll run up against somebody that they are not quite expecting. Maybe it's the Bills. I don't see that it may. The Bills could be a good contender. They might have their hands full with the Broncos. I don't know. They were running against them twice this season. And I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, it doesn't seem like they have they don't seem like they had a really stacked schedule. You know, I mean, to be quite honest, they're going to play the Raiders twice, which is kind of a pushover game. They're going to play the Broncos twice, if I remember right. Let's see. Yeah, they're going to play the Broncos twice, play the Raiders once already. They're going to play them again for the end of the regular season. It just seems like they kind of got an easy street schedule. So, you know, they softball the schedule for them to kind of keep them in the loop, but I don't feel like they're going to be that strong going into the last half of the regular season. Who knows? I could be wrong. You know, maybe somebody will surprise them and show up and catch them again if they make, which I'm pretty sure they'll make it to the playoffs. I have very little doubt that the Chiefs are going to be going back to the playoffs at the very least. I don't know that they'll make it to the championship slot. Sorry. A little cough, cough, cough there. I don't know if they make it to like the championships. I don't even necessarily say that they'll make it all the way to the Super Bowl, which is highly possible. I mean, it's not unlikely. But I will say that I think that they got a very easy street kind of skate schedule for the regular season. And I just hope that whatever happens, if they do make it to the playoffs, that they have some really tough playoff games. Basically, not to watch them lose, but to make them prove that they are who they say they are and that they deserve to be there. But yeah, let's go into the Gridiron Gripes for 2 weeks now, because normally this would be done on Wednesday. But I think this Wednesday we're going to be plenty busy talking about a bunch of other shit besides football. So yeah, let's get after it. Oh boy, how do you do it? How do you do it? My beloved Chicago Bears, man. Just the lovable losers that just never stop losing. You know, it's been rough. So they've taken two L's in the last 2 weeks, one against the Commanders, who I was mentioning earlier, 18-15. It's kind of a narrow loss. You know, a lot of people were really upset because, you know, it looked like they could have taken it. And then they just kind of got scooped at the last second, which, heartbreaker, I know. But at the same time, you know, there's a little good and a little bad. And the Chicago needs a real overhaul in the front office, I think, especially from the ownership all the way down to the coaching staff needs an overhaul. I think they have the right people on the team to make it work. As you've seen, even with them being 4-4 this early on in the season, they've still managed to win some pretty good games and to put up some numbers against some solid teams. Even if they didn't win. But, you know, you got to balance that out with, you know, having a good staff, having responsible ownership that's going to make sure that the team builds and all that jazz. They took another L against the Cardinals just last night. Didn't actually get to watch that game. It was out of market, but at 29-9, I'm pretty glad I didn't watch it. I would have been really upset and heartbroken to watch that one. Also, the Steelers were out there. They've been pushing a little bit. The Bears stand right now at 4-4. The Steelers have a bye this week, but week before last, they played against the Giants. They got a win, 26-18. I have to go back and look at that game because I know that there are pieces and parts of games that I see because I'm trying to follow three teams. And there's just not enough time to watch all the football, right? You know, if you're a football fan, you get what I'm talking about. Between the channels being split apart and, you know, one game being hosted on this day, but it's hosted on this network, and this one's hosted on the same day, but it's hosted on a different network, and this one's only hosted on this network, and who knows what day that game's going to be kind of thing. It's hard to keep up with all the football, but yeah, good congratulations to the Steelers, who of the three teams we follow here on this show are 6-2, and they get their very much deserved bye week right now. So get a little bit of rest, guys. You're going to need it for the next week, because I think the Steelers are going to have their hands full when they meet up with the Washington Commanders this coming Sunday. Nobody walks away from the Commanders just completely scratch-free. They're going to get touched. So good luck to the Steelers coming up against the Commanders. And then the Jacksonville Jaguars. Oh, boy. And this is tough. It's really hard to be a Jaguars fan in general. It's been incredibly hard to be a Jaguars fan this year. Currently sitting at 2-7, the Jaguars took two big fat L's in very small ways too, against two teams that, I mean, they probably should have been had their clocks cleaned by, but they held in there. The Jaguars lose 30-27 against the Green Bay Packers back in week 8. And this past week, week 9, they took another knee to the Eagles, coming in at 28-23. And here's the thing. You can see just by the tight margin of some of these games, you know, it's not like a complete blowout all the time, that Jacksonville, again, like Chicago, has the talent and the ability to stand on shoulders, you know, stand shoulder to shoulder with some of the titans in the NFL. The problem, again, just like Chicago, is that I don't think their coaching staff is very sharp when it comes to making critical calls in critical moments. Also, I think in this particular instance, while the front end is doing stupid shit like trying to build another stadium, which absolutely does not need to happen, one of the other issues that they have is that their team isn't completely consistent. They're not a bad team. They're obviously great because they're playing the game. I'm not. But you can tell at certain points they get shaken. And when they get shaken, it's hard for them to find their footing and come back. And that could be due to the youth of the team. It could also be due to the fact that if a player doesn't perform at, you know, in the top 10% of all the NFL, then they get cut and they get sent to another place, and then they go over there and then come back to Jacksonville and kick Jacksonville's ass. That could be that. It could be that. I think that's probably the bigger issue, is that there's no consistency, and there's a lack of confidence in the idea that, oh, I'm going to be able to stick around even if I don't have a winning season, or if I don't put up the highest marks. They're not just going to cut me and toss me. And that's a problem that's been endemic to Chicago and to Jacksonville. When the players aren't performing at the, you know, highest echelons, then they just cut them and toss them out like garbage. And then they have nobody to build on. And they don't have anybody to build on, and nobody wants to build with these teams because the teams show no loyalty to their players. Any player can have a bad day. Any player can have a bad season. But when you're consistently dropping people like a hot rock just because they don't get you all the way to the playoffs, and every year you're making that roster change, you also don't develop any loyalty to the fans. You don't develop any loyalty within the team itself. And the individual players don't feel any loyalty to the organization or even to the city. They just know that this is a stopgap on, well, this is like a stepping stone, essentially, sorry, a stepping stone on the way to having a better career somewhere else where they'll be appreciated. And it's bitten Jacksonville in the ass more than I care to admit, just especially in the last, just this season, seeing former Jacksonville Jaguars come to Jacksonville or have Jacksonville show up in their now new backyard and getting the piss beat out of them because Jacksonville has showed no loyalty. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. A lot of people who are from Jacksonville may not get it. Some people who I know who live in Jacksonville and have left will understand. But Jacksonville actually has that kind of feel as a city. They're a very fair weather kind of city, and I think maybe it's something to do with being in Northeast Florida. But there's very little loyalty, and then when things go tits up, you know, there's a lot of bitching and moaning and complaining. But it's like, well, what did you do to help, right? What have you invested into it to make it good? For my part, I've actually been trying to figure out a way to earn enough money so I can buy season tickets for the Jacksonville Jaguars. But another part of me is kind of like, I don't want to spend X amount of hundreds of dollars to buy season tickets for them to just shit the bed every week. You hear what I'm saying? And I'm not from this city, so it's like it's even crazier when you see people who are diehard fans. They buy the season tickets, they go to the stadium, and then at halftime, they're walking out. It's very crazy. So it's hard to build confidence in the team, you know, for this, you know, for the city's sake and for the people who live here, when they watch the team just basically change every, you know, every 365 days, there's a new set of faces to have to learn and get used to, and you know, for the for them as a team to kind of to gel with. But we'll see how things shake out. We're still a couple of weeks out from the end of the regular season. The Bears are going up against the, all these games, by the way, they're coming up this Sunday, are at 1 p.m. Eastern. So hopefully I get a chance to at least get them on some kind of network where I can record the game. And even if I'm not able to report on it right away, I'll be able to watch it later and, you know, give you my best insights come next Wednesday. Hopefully things will smooth over. But we have the Bears versus the Patriots, the Jaguars versus the Vikings, and the Steelers versus the Commanders. All those going down on November 10th, Sunday, November 10th at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard. Even though it is the Bears, the Patriots haven't been the brightest bulb in the chandelier. Let's just put it that way. The Patriots aren't terrible. I mean, not by any stretch necessarily, but they're not great. You know what I mean? On average, like usually you go Patriots. Yeah, they're going to always be pretty solid. Patriots are as bad as Jacksonville this year. I think the Bears can take them. So I'm taking my Chicago Bears to beat the Patriots. I'm not going to put any points up or anything like that. It's not a betting podcast. But I'm taking the Bears over the Pats. And the Jags versus Vikings, you already know. I'm taking the Vikings. The Vikings are just, they're just pretty pretty solid this year. And I don't see any reason why the Jacksonville would suddenly perk up against the Vikings. But hey, any given Sunday, right? And as far as Steelers versus Commanders, well, I think that the Steelers are a solid team. And this is a pretty decent matchup so far. As it stands, the Steelers are 6-2 and the Commanders are 7-2. I just think the Commanders have a little bit more, you know, a little bit longer teeth on this one. I think they want it just as bad as the Steelers. But I think that they've proven themselves to be stalwart enough to take on some of the bigger names in the league and to come out standing on top. And I think the Steelers just aren't quite there yet. They're not bad, but they're still not quite at the level of the Commanders. So that's where we sit right now. And I'm taking the Commanders over the Steelers. And let's see if I'm right or wrong or what else happens, you know, on the way into next week. And, you know, good luck to the Bucks and Chiefs this tonight. I don't know what's going to happen there, but that's not my place right now. That's in the future. Right now, we just got to worry about what's going on here. And it's interesting because I mentioned just a second ago, you know, that like the hardest thing being a football fan is trying to find out what to watch, when and where and how it's going to happen. And nowhere has that become more obvious for me personally when it comes to watching games than trying to catch a game here, even in the state. Even if it's not played in the city of Jacksonville, if it's anywhere in the state of Florida, or if it's anywhere near this like television market, getting a Jaguars game on TV is almost impossible. I've seen Jaguars games and Bears games get preempted by Atlanta Falcons games, which isn't weird because they're close, but still, really? Like, you know, the Bears would be playing somebody, you know, in this state, you know, in this, you know, and they're like, yeah, screw it. Let's watch Atlanta instead. They're playing somebody on the other side of the country and they'll cut to that game instead of one that's happening right now actively in this local market. It's super dumb. But one of the things I've been saying for a while is that, you know, with the proliferation of streaming services and just the overall greed of the NFL and these various companies who make deals with them, it was going to come to a point where the center couldn't hold. And they're like, we've spread ourselves too thin, too fast, and people are getting pissed off with us. So they're not even tuning into the games on the services that they have. I know a lot of people who are like, you know, the game might be on Amazon Prime or on, you know, Peacock or whatever, but I don't watch it unless it's on regular ass TV. You know what I mean? Because at least then I know that, like, I can go over to my buddy's house, or, you know, we can talk to one another. And if I have all the streaming services and they have none, then I'm sitting here giving them reports on a game that they're basically watching a ticker on. So in the spirit of that, it gave me no small amount of pleasure to giggle my butt off by finding out that YouTube is dropping the price of NFL Sunday Ticket. Now, originally, NFL Sunday Ticket was $379 a year. But here we are. This email came to me yesterday in the early afternoon hours. And it was kind of, I guess it was like early morning, like late morning, early afternoon. Like the way they, hey, we have football over here too. We have an NFL Sunday Ticket. Remember us? Remember us, guys? Huh? You want? Can you give us money? Yeah, they dropped their price. It's insane. It was $379 originally. I would give you, if you were here in person, I would give you a guess as to what it actually is right now. But we're not gonna play with it. It's about seriously, it's almost cut in half. It's down to $209 a year. That's how big of an L they're taking on this right now. It was almost $400, and they're willing to cut the price almost. It's like 45-47% discount for you to just sign up. Please pay for our service. We know you guys are already paying for YouTube Premium. Pay for our NFL Sunday Ticket too. Ha 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 ha. Screw you. Screw the NFL too for doing this. You know, with all the weird rule changes and the way they've, you know, totally hamstrung the game of football, you know, not to be put too fine a point on it. It actually feels kind of good to watch them squirm, you know? It's not very often that as a consumer, you get a chance to take it to a company by not doing anything. And without boycotting it, I think people are starting to boycott, like, all the different ways to watch the NFL. Which is a real stupid thing on their part, because I know what their thinking was. Their thinking was is that the NFL season is already very short compared to practically every other popular American major league sport, right? So in order for them to capitalize on getting as much money out of the entire viewer base as possible, they spread out to try to make it to where they could reach into as many different pockets that were already established and familiar as possible. The downside of that is that instead of maybe focusing on one or two even, they went so far and grabbed so much that they're getting a smaller market share from each one because people are getting tired of having to chase games all week long. Like, you know, this one's over here on Hulu. This one's on, like I said, you know, Peacock. This one's on YouTube Premium or whatever the fuck, NFL Sunday Ticket. This one's on Tubi. You know, they're like, people are like, no, I don't want to have 18 different services just to watch the games each week. Cut it back to either putting them all on regular ass cable TV or put them all on NFL Network and I'll just buy that one package and be done with it. And because they got so greedy, they're eating it when it comes to that, you know, streamer service. So congratulations, you played yourself, as our boy DJ Khaled would say. And sucks to suck, man. Be better. I think that's the one thing that corporate greed's really gotten under the skin of a lot of people. They're like, I don't want to have to fight with the corporation for stuff that I've been able to have all this time. So for YouTube's NFL Sunday Ticket to take like literally like an almost 50% cut just so people will sign up for it is funny to me. It's hilarious. Ha 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 ha. Yeah, it sucks. And not, you know, normally I wouldn't celebrate when, you know, somebody loses their job or they're struggling or whatever, but this isn't a people. This is a corporation. I know that because of deregulation, we're supposed to treat corporations like people. Well, if that's the case, I can say whatever the fuck I want about you. And I hope shit doesn't work out. One thing I'm actually not happy about, as well as, here's the thing. I'm not happy that this happened, but it's almost kind of in a way, maybe it's a little self-serving. In a way, it's almost like vindicating of an attitude I've held about a certain place, Jacksonville in particular as a city, in particular, Jacksonville in general as a city, but there's one area of the city in particular called Five Points, which I've mentioned before on the podcast. There are some awesome places down there. Like we talked about Biggie's Pizza last week, and there's other locations that are down there that are pretty cool places to hang out, like Hoptinger. which is an interesting looking three level bar. But all that aside, I mentioned before that, 5 points is not a very well designed area, and the way that their commerce is being commerce is being pushed into that area doesn't suit with the poor city planning design. There's great ideas that are coming up in there, and I think that part of the reason why they keep shifting and changing is because as one business fails, somebody needs to still pay the rent on the building that they've been leasing out shopfront space in, and so they let it go for pretty cheap. Something else comes in there, stays for a while, struggles and fails. And then some places have like a little bit of a different turn or twist or a gimmick that makes them hold on a little bit longer, and then they fail. So one of the biggest ones that came recently was a place called Sunray Cinema. Sunray, you guys probably remember my my beef with Sunray, and the beef was that they had shit for parking, and then the staff that were there, at least when I was talking to them, were basically, we'll say less than helpful in trying to, continue to give them money and take advantage of being able to visit their theater because I'd never had the opportunity. Because they were so shitty, I lost the money that I had spent on a ticket to go and see a film festival there. I never went back, and I've hated the place ever since. So when it closed, there was a small little bit of haha, go fuck yourself on that one. I know people love Sunray, and that's great for them. I couldn't give a fuck because I had a terrible experience with them, and they were really shitty to me, so fuck them. As far as this new bout of, closings and stuff like that, there's a place called Rain Dogs, which is a very interesting, kind of cool, has a, in a weird way, it has kind of like a Midwestern dive bar kind of aesthetic that I really dig. I just found out this weekend that they're closing down, and that's actually pretty sad. Because it seems like the person who opened and ran Rain Dogs, I never got to meet personally, but put a lot of love into building that place up. And it looked like it was, I've been there a couple of times. I enjoyed it when I was there. And the vibe, like I said, was really cool. Local music, stuff like that. I really dug that. And it's heartbreaking to see somebody lose their dream. But what I'm kind of, and this is a kind of a circuitous way of saying, I'm kind of glad that people are starting to realize how shitty 5 Points is as an area, because maybe it'll give people an impetus to move into a more accessible, more agreeable to small businesses, and a more safe area to host like a nightlife scene. And it's like it was trying to build there in 5 Points, and it's kind of, it's not kind of, it's very difficult because the streets are very narrow. The speed limit is very small. Because they're so narrow and they're kind of like paved over horse paths, it looks like they weave and wander and meander in some pretty bizarre configurations, which can make for difficult traffic situations for pedestrians and for vehicles. And it's nestled in the middle of like basically three different neighborhoods, like residential neighborhoods. So imagine that you bought this, nice little colonial house that's near the river, and you're like, you can walk through the place and go to the park with your kids, to go to school, and then just a block and a half away, there's people who are partying until all hours of the night. There's shootings there occasionally, and you've bought a home here. Like that can't feel good for the people who live around that area. And I'm not thrilled that people have tried to build an opportunity for themselves and create something for themselves and failed or had to shutter their doors. The one thing I've understood though recently, especially after we've come through the majority of the worst of the pandemic with COVID, is that a lot of these areas were not designed to survive a more internet focused sort of marketing structure or commerce structure. One of the hardest things that we're going to realize too is that as we pushed more and more away from physical currency and physical media, and that's games, music, books, just the way that we handle cash transactions or commerce in general, we're going to find really quickly that too much of reliance on digital is over specializing, and we're going to breed in weakness. And like the Ghost in the Shell line goes, eventually it won't hold because you need electricity to, run these registers. You need a point of access, like a wireless point of access point, to be able to run, you know, the internet connected registers and point of sale systems. If you're so heavily reliant on technology that you don't have, you're just ground to a halt if things go bad, then you're screwed. There are some stories that came out from various places over the past couple of months of hurricanes where people were like, I had a reservation and I went to go and pay for my reservation, but the hotel couldn't pull it up because the Wi-Fi had gone out and they were running on a backup generator. The generator wasn't enough to run the Wi-Fi because of obviously, you know, to run the whole hotel, and the lines were down, the computers were down. I was there trying to show up for the room that I had checked into to be able to, you know, stay the night. And I couldn't get in because they couldn't pull up the computer to see my reservations. You see what I'm saying? He's like, but if I had cash, I'm like, hey, man, is there a room for room available? You don't know? Okay, cool. You've got one over there. Here's $125 or whatever it would be for the room. It's a Motel 6, or it's like, you know, I got $500 cold hard cash. You need a room right here at the, you know, Radisson or whatever. Get me in there. But we've gone away so far from that that eventually we're going to cripple ourselves. And I think that's kind of what happened with 5 Points. Is without realizing that, you know, this neighborhood is developing, this area is growing and changing. We've refused to change with it just as a community, and also as like a, not a community just of persons who live there, but a community of entrepreneurs and business people haven't found a better way to shift the commerce and traffic and things like that through that location and to build it up into a more, you know, concentrated, but also a much more conducive environment for all that stuff to flourish. Everybody's just kind of carving out their own niche for themselves, and it's every man for themselves, and then they lose. And it's unfortunate. And hopefully the lessons will be learned, because I know how difficult that can be for someone. I mean, just trying to build this podcast up by myself is torturously difficult. So I'm not begrudging anybody their success or their struggles. I'm not making fun of it. I'm not making light of it. My heart goes out to those people who are built their dreams up and, you know, who had their jobs there and who are now going to be losing those jobs, because that sucks. But I hope that when you look forward, that, you know, maybe you look forward into a place where you can find a better network of interconnected people who are focused on a goal of building something that's more resilient in a more conducive area for it. But again, like I said, that's kind of Jacksonville, though. It's kind of what happens around here. Shit breaks, then it just breaks more, and then before long, nothing happens, and everybody loses. It's unfortunate, but that, I mean, that happens. I don't know what to say about it anymore. I should skip this and just maybe next podcast, I should maybe do a live somewhere where I go pick my glasses. I haven't gotten these new glasses yet, mainly because I don't like the idea of having to pay $270 for a pair of glasses and lenses. I know that medical care is not cheap, and I know that glasses are not free. I'm not a fool. But the amount of money that goes into healthcare in general is disgusting. And then any specific thing that you need, like somebody was mentioning the other day, it's like, it's weird that I pay so much money for health insurance, but I have to pay separate for vision and dental. Like my eyes and teeth aren't a part of my whole body and affect my health, right? Like if you pay for medical insurance, all this shit should be covered. And medical insurance is the biggest scam in the world. Right outside of renter's insurance or home insurance and auto insurance. Like just insurance in general is the biggest scam, but medical insurance is probably the biggest one out of all of them. At least occasionally your homeowner's insurance or your vehicle insurance will pay out for something. Medical insurance does everything they possibly can to give you nothing at all, despite how much you paid in premiums over or, you know, copays at all. They don't give a fuck about you at all, ever. And I say that because I used to work for an insurance company because I needed a job. It was easy to get to and from because my girlfriend and I worked at the same place. So we didn't have to split, you know, oh, we got to go this way. We just worked the same schedule. We leave for work together, come home together. Easy, right? The day that I had to tell some older gentleman that he could not have an extra prescription filled for his wife's heart medication because it had gotten lost or destroyed while they were on a trip, and just listen to this man cry and beg me to let him get medicine so his wife could live, was the last day I worked in insurance. I had already been conflicted about it from the start. But that at that day, I went home and cried for hours just because I was like, I literally do the devil's work. I do the devil's work for them. And I quit the very next day. I'm like, I'm not coming back here. I don't give a fuck what else I have to do. This is unconscionable. Insurance and collections, two positions that should absolutely be eradicated from our society, and that should not be a job. You know what I mean? That should be up to the individual creditor to have to handle when it comes to collections. If you don't get it, then fucking you lost. But a collections agency, ugh, the grimiest people. So disgusting. And insurance salesmen are just above them as far as slime, just the scum of the earth. It's all gloom and doom today, baby. I don't know what to tell you. It's just been nuts. Let's talk about some more weird stuff. yeah, I don't know what it is about people. You know, everybody says, like, this state has the worst drivers. This state has the worst drivers. I'm still 100% convinced that Florida has the worst drivers because people come here to retire. So, like, the shittiest drivers from every place come here, and then they set up shop, and then they just, you know, they're shitty children who don't know how to drive come here, and then they just become the worst drivers ever. It was so crazy. Like, I was actually leaving to go run some errands, and it was Halloween night. I'm in my neighborhood, which also is batshit crazy, that only on the main the streets where the houses actually are there lights, but on the main drag that connects all three of these little cul-de-sacs slash, you know, courts or whatever, there's absolutely zero street lights. Nothing. It's pitch black. It looks like something out of The Walking Dead. So from the main access road to our little subdivision, there's zero street light. There's no giant signboard, you know, like you'd see in the normal neighborhood with lights and stuff saying, hey, welcome to Shady Springs Estates or whatever, right? None of that shit. It's pitch black. And it's such an abrupt turn that if you're not looking for it, you'll miss it. So there's that. Then you got kids and parents walking up and down the street. Almost no one had on any kind of reflective clothing. Almost no one was carrying a flashlight or any kind of lighting device of any kind. Like, even like some, I mean, put some fucking Skechers lights on the kids, you know, so I could see their footsteps as they're walking, but no, none of that. I'm like, you're walking your kids up and down this dark ass street with none of this going on? Like, I don't know how many you intend to make, but let me just let you know that the turnaround on creating a new one after you've had one get killed by a vehicle is pretty lengthy. How about, like, I don't know, put a little bit of glow tape around Johnny and then walk to the house. Like, it was so amazing because everywhere I went, I saw trick-or-treaters and no one was wearing this shit. It was so prevalent when I was a kid. I remembered it. Like, there's like PSAs that I remembered seeing about, like, wearing a reflective vest or, you know, putting reflective tape around your arms, legs, and stuff like that so that people would see you while you were walking. Or carry a flashlight or a lantern or something like that so people would know where you were. And I'm watching grown-ass people with their little kids just strolling them. And here's the other thing. We have a sidewalk. There's a whole fucking sidewalk. They were walking them in the street. Like, this, how irresponsible can you possibly be to walk your kids in the fucking street? There's no light. They have no... it couldn't be me. It couldn't be me. Then I turned around. Like I said, I left the division. I turned out to this new horror show of an intersection that they've created here. And this guy on a motorcycle was heading towards me and decided it's a two-lane road. He decided he was going to zip around the vehicle that was in front of him in the oncoming lane and came into my lane and was heading right towards me and missed me by maybe 10 feet when he swerved back over into his lane. I'm like, what is wrong with everyone today? I wish it was the worst of it, but it wasn't. I mean, this one lady was, again, I've talked about this before in the past. You're in a parking lot for a grocery store or some kind of shopping center. Don't park your fucking cart right next to your vehicle in the empty parking, you know, in the empty parking spot. Other people are trying to get in and out too. You know what I mean? If you can't do that and pull it close enough to your vehicle to let another one park, put it behind your fucking car and just walk your shit around, right? Simple. Plus, people will see it as opposed to coming around the corner of your car and maybe hitting your packages, hitting your cart. if God forbid you have a kid inside the buggy or whatever, and then your kid's injured or dead or, you know, whatever, like just park it behind the fucking thing. Take your kid out, put them in first. The other stuff can be replaced. But no, this lady left her kid sitting in the thing first of all. Then while she was unloading all the packages, she looked at me like I'm crazy because I'm trying to park in the one space that's open here. And now cars are piling up behind me because I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. This lady's going to move or we're going to have a fucking problem. So then she finally moves her cart and I pull in and I'm looking at her and she stares back at me and I'm like, don't even, do not even, don't open your fucking mouth right now. I will embarrass both of us in front of your kid. I have no problems making your kids hate you and hate me. They're not my kids. I don't give a fuck about them. But she just was looking at me with the stankest of face. I'm like, fuck you, lady. I know how to do this. I've been doing it for years. The fact that you don't and you're allowed to have a kid is staggering to me. God. And then it was like also like the people who just change lanes without putting their lights, like putting one, without turning their lights on while they're driving at dusk or even at night when it's like pitch black. No lights, just driving on main roads. Like it's just the thing to do. And then don't use your signal to switch lanes. Like you could very well easily somebody not see you and you get smashed or you're driving like 15, 20 miles below the speed limit. It's one thing maybe if you're in a residential neighborhood and speed limit's like 25, 30 and you're doing like 10, 15. Great. Maybe it's an overabundance of caution, but at least you're being mindful of the fact that people are living there. When the speed limit is 55 and you're doing 35, you're going to cause a fucking accident. You need to get off the road or you need to be all the way in the right-hand lane. You cannot be in the travel lane or in the left-hand lane when you're doing 20 below the fucking speed limit. You are going to get someone killed. I don't know what I can do to make that more clear. Do I have to take out a billboard or something somewhere and be like, hey, asshole, move over to the right? You know, it's just so dumb. And it would be one thing if it was like, I call them granny drivers. It'd be one thing if it was actual, like, you know, 60, 70, 80-year-old people who are doing this. Hell no. People in their, like, 20s and 30s, well, in their late 20s, early 30s, you know, 40s even, are just lollygagging the fuck along while everybody's trying to get around them. And it's like, dude, get the fuck out of the way. I couldn't understand, like, what is it that makes people feel, I know there's a certain sense of entitlement, like, you know, I'm driving here too. But you know, if you use your fucking turn signal, you don't have to worry about getting sideswiped by somebody who's moving super fast. If you turn your lights on, you're easier to see. And if you at least drive the speed limit, I'm fine if you don't want to do 5 over. A lot of people do. Not everybody's comfortable with that. You have to at least do the speed limit. You cannot be 10, 15, 20 miles under the speed limit and then be like, why is everybody honking at me? Get the fuck out of the way. Everybody else has stuff to do, man. Damn. It's super annoying. And as you can tell, I'm super annoyed by it. Oh boy. I don't know what to do. You know, let's switch gears a little bit. One more time. You want to talk about the Xbox saga. I know some of you guys might be wondering, what happened? What's going on? Well, here's the thing. Finally got the Xbox, my original Xbox Bella back. And got her plugged in. Got all the game share stuff swapped over and signed up. So we should be good to go. But then, you know, stuff happened. Like I said, had the little family medical stuff pop up. And I haven't really touched this thing except to update it for the last week or so. So I don't know that it fully works for an entire play session. Hopefully, today being Monday, I'll do my subscriber giveaway and we'll get to find out if it'll hold up to an entire extended play session. But we don't know. We'll see. So that means at some point this next week up into the weekend, we've got time, but we're going to take back the quote unquote new Xbox and that we used as a stopgap while this one was shipped off to be repaired. And we'll send it, we'll take it back and get our money back. But yeah, it's banana balls crazy that it took all that just to get this thing repaired. I'm not even kidding. What they did was so dumb, and I think I mentioned it last podcast. All they did was just scoop the guts out of it and put brand new parts inside. You could have just given me a brand new Xbox and stopped being a dick about it. But that is one of the reasons why my wife and I were like, we're just not going to Best Buy anymore. Best Buy could suck it. Their return policy is insane. If it weren't for the fact that we paid for their protection plan for other devices, we wouldn't have been able to exercise that, you know, 60 days no return, 60 days return no questions asked on new purchases. We would have missed that shit. So we would have just been stuck, and my Xbox would just be floating around somewhere until it showed up, which again, we had to call them to remind them, hey, you have to ship this thing out. They're like, oh shit, yeah. It took them almost 2 full weeks indeed, because they had left it sitting on the shelf for a week in the first place. What a bunch of morons. But again, like we talked about earlier, you know, when they get their money, they got you by the short hairs. They don't give a fuck about you anymore. So yeah, that's the Xbox saga as it stands right now. I did manage to go and do a little something, something for myself where, the real thing I wanted to do, I worked for the Board of Education in Illinois for a while in Chicago. And while I was there, I paid union dues, but since I never had to use any of their services and whatnot, and I've never claimed any pension money from them, all my pension fund money came back. So I got like a little check that was kind of giving me a little bit of a cushion, which perfectly timed right when I needed it to help out with some very trying moments here. And the one thing I wanted to do, I have not done, but I've been planning it because I'm thinking maybe next week I'm going to go take a look. I should have probably done it sooner. I've been wanting to buy a pistol for a long time. And I never got a chance to actually do it. But I still have some .38 caliber ammunition here at the house that I wanted to go and take up to the local range and fire. Now they tell me that I can do that because I'm like, I bought it from you guys. It's center fire ammo. It should be fine with all the weapons that you have on display. And they're like, well, if you blow up a pistol, then you bought it. I'm like, well, fuck it. I might as well just buy a .38 then. The only problem is most of the .38s I've found have like a very short grip. And I have very broad palms. So like when I pull the trigger on this thing, it bounces back and it almost comes out of my hand. Because I can't get my hand all the way around the grip, but it doesn't extend long enough so that my grip is secure on it. So I don't know what to do about that. It's just bugging me. I just looked up there and I saw the 38 ammo and I'm like, shit. I need to find a way to shoot that stuff off, or I need to find a place that can, I don't know, dispose of it, recycle it, whatever the hell you do with it. I don't know. I'm still learning. As much as I do know about guns, there's still some stuff that I'm not completely familiar with. And I'm hoping that I can learn a little bit more about. But yeah, maybe come this, I don't know, maybe this Christmas I'll get my pistol. But it's because it's election season and people are weird. I actually wished I'd had it sooner. Even though, like, you can't take your gun in to vote. I'm like, watch me. I'll tell you why. This happened here just in the past week, and I don't know how many of you are in the state of Florida or have heard any of this stuff. I think this may have made national news, but I know it definitely hit big around here. Anyway, this incident happened in Neptune Beach, Florida, which is not necessarily near where I live, but I could very easily see it happening. I used to live in Neptune Beach for a while, but this 18-year-old kid was accused of brandishing a machete while confronting Kamala Harris supporters when they were at a Neptune Beach polling site. That was Tuesday of this past week. So it's almost a week ago. He's been ordered to stay at least 1,000 feet away from any polling location unless he's voting himself. So Caleb Williams went to court on Wednesday on a second-degree felony charge of aggravated assault on a person 65 years or older and a first-degree misdemeanor charge of improper exhibition of a firearm or dangerous weapon. Also got a voter intimidation charge. His bond was set at $55,006. He has to wear a GPS monitor and is not allowed to be within 1,000 feet of a polling place unless he's voting. Oh, and guess what? Fun guy, right? Registered Republican. Neat. So he was actually, there's some sign waivers out there like, vote for Harris, vote for Wallace. And he's come up on these older people with the fucking machete. Two women, actually. So really, really tough guy, right? Aged 54 and 71. In the 18-inch machete in plain view in his truck when police finally got a hold of him. He should actually be in jail. But he's young and he's white, so that's not going to happen. You can say what you want, but I mean, it's fucking true. You can look the story up yourself. He's only out because he's young and white and, you know, he's able to get away with it. I want to know who he was he waved the machete at. Because actually, you know, I kind of don't, because all that would do is just piss me the fuck off. And this election cycle has been contentious enough in the first place, just with the tremendous levels of stupid we've seen. Just the people, not even Trump or Vance themselves, all the other people around them have fucking drunk the Kool-Aid to the point where it's unbelievable. God, what was it we were watching? It was on, I want to say it was on CNN. Actually, it was on CNN. Yeah, this is on CNN. So there's a show on CNN called CNN Newsnight with Abby Phillip. And this young black lady, really sharp, really fun to listen to. Usually has some pretty engaging hosts. Especially over the last couple of weeks, has gotten some pretty volatile people on the show. And they've said some pretty hateful shit, you know what I mean? Or at least out of line kind of stuff. And every now and again, she has to either shut down the show to kind of get control over it again, or she has to have somebody removed from the panel. This was a couple, it's like about a week or so ago, a little over. I mean, it happened like, I think it was Monday. Yeah, it happened on Monday. So it was a week ago to the day. There's a journalist on there called Mehdi Hassan who stated that he supports Palestinians. And there's a white dude on there, conservative commentator, of course, Ryan Gadersky, who, after he made the comment, he's like, I'm support Palestinians. I'm used to this kind of racist rhetoric. And then Gadersky says, good, I hope your beeper doesn't go off. Ryan Gadersky is no stranger to vitriolic racist, although they're usually more veiled, kind of racist remarks, misogynistic kind of things that he'll say and do on the various shows that he's been on. But this was probably the first time that he kind of loosely flung a death wish, not a threat, like a death wish at somebody. And it was just live on national television, which is where we're at, I guess, in this day and age in America as a country and then American political commentary in particular. Yeah, it got a little wild. Hassan actually asked Abby Phillip, did your guest just say I should be killed on live TV? And the guitarist goes, I didn't actually say that. No, I didn't say that, but you did. He actually tried to moonwalk on himself and say like he didn't say what he actually said. We all heard him say, and they could have just gone, play the tape. We're sitting right here, fucker. Hey, control room, run that tape back. Is that not you sitting right here 30 seconds ago saying exactly that? Well, they kicked him off the show, obviously, and said that he won't be invited back to CNN anytime, which is amazing that it took that. But then they also ended up getting rid of Mehdi Hassan. And it's like, well, why? Why'd you remove him from the show? He didn't do anything wrong. He was sitting there having a reasonable debate with everyone else. And this dude got mad. And he's snapped off with this idea that, like, you know, hey, you support Palestinians? Well, hope you don't get exploded like the other people, you know, in Hezbollah or Hamas. You know, maybe that could happen. That's kind of his insinuation. While he's not trying to come out and say it, he did say it, you know. But later on X, of course, Gadersky has to post up like he's a victim. Apparently, you can't go on CNN if you make a joke. I'm glad America gets to see what CNN stands for. You know what CNN stands for? Come on now, nigga. You knew you had no business saying that shit on TV. That is your fucking fault. You earned that shit. And you know what? I would think if I was Mehdi Hassan, you'd have to let me go and I'd have to excuse myself from the show so that when you kick Ryan Gadersky out, I could beat his fucking ass in the parking lot. How dare you? That guy deserved to have his teeth kicked in on national TV. That's what I said to my wife when we watched it. I'm like, it couldn't be me. He said some shit like that, I had to throw my coffee mug right in his face. I had to broke his shit right on TV. You're like, well, we're gonna figure this shit out right now. As the man Brian Simpson says, you got to see me. we're gonna discuss this shit, and we're gonna discuss this shit with Knuckles, baby. That's you literally just waved a threat at me of, you know, a death wish on me. I'm like, fuck out of here, dude. I'm surprised he didn't crush his fucking head in. Like I said, better man than me. But they want to let that go. And then when Biden says that, you know, the only garbage he sees are the people who support Trump, suddenly he's a bad person for saying that. It's like this motherfucker said he hoped that this dude's beeper didn't go off, and basically saying, maybe you'll blow up and die. And Biden just says, yeah, you people are garbage people for supporting Trump, which is, I mean, at this point right now, if you look around, it's a factual statement. I mean, the fact that he's as disgusting and as vitriolic and as acerbic and as misogynistic, homophobic, racist, and hateful in general, just hateful in general, and you still support him means you're a trash person too. Let's just be honest with it, right? Because none of that changed your mind. You just decided, you know what? Even though I know that he's a horrible, terrible turd of a human being, still my guy. Get the fuck out of here, really? Like, these are, and it'd be one thing if you didn't know and wasn't sure and didn't have any visual proof or evidence, right? Like, we have fucking tape of Hitler. You know, there's actually film of Hitler saying the stuff that he said. You have it delivered to you in real time in 4K HD, you know, on your cell phone right now, live streamed every minute of whatever you want to watch. And you're still like, well, you know, I just don't know. Seems like he's my guy. Then that means you're trash. That means you're a shit person. That's all I can say is when I see that in people, I see Trump stickers, I immediately go, shit person, don't want to know him. Don't want to be bothered with them at all. Because I can't see supporting someone who's like that and then trying to call yourself a decent human being. It just doesn't click to me. It doesn't resonate. There's too much of a cognitive gap that you have to make. The mental gymnastics, as myself and my buddy Brett like to say, are so insane that Simone Biles couldn't pull them off. Like, that's how dumb it is. That's how dumb you have to be willing to be. You have to willfully decide to be this fucking stupid in order to support this guy and think you're a good person. And I just fucking can't. And it's weird because, you know, they'll get away with anything. At least they'll get away with anything, but they'll also excuse away anything if it makes them feel good. So the whole GOP rally at Madison Square Garden that happened over the last week or so, I'm sure you guys have all heard about it by now. I'm sure you've probably seen it by now. I'm sure you're probably over it by now. But it bears repeating that that whole thing was basically a Trump in advance, mostly a Trump, but a Trump suck fest. And they're just kissing up to him, just sucking up to him, trying to make him feel like he's so powerful, he's so strong, he's the dear leader. And then he comes after, oh my God. We were just talking about it the other day, and I think I forgot it. I wrote the note down. Liz Cheney, calling her a coward, saying that, you know, if she was standing out in front of, we should put her out. He said this, we should put her out on the field of battle and put 9 rifles in her face and see how she handles it. Again with the fucking death wish on people? Bro, that's wild. That's a wild, weird statement, man. So if he put a gun in her hands and then had her run out in the battle, she'd be so scared she'd turn tail and run. Bitch ass nigga, you didn't even go. They was drafting you. You're like, oh, I got bone spurs in my feet. Ugh, I can't go. No, don't send me to Vietnam. Oh, really? Who's a coward now, Donnie boy? But again, as long as they can figure out a way to spin it, and even, I mean, it's the smallest spin you can get out of it, then it's okay. It's all right. Even though we're just jokes. It's just, you know, it's just a hyperbolic statement. You know, we're just putting out a hypothetical. You know, we're not saying we'd actually do this. Yes, the fuck you would. You literally stated that you would use the military to go after your political opponents if you were to win the election in 2024. Just tomorrow. So if you were declared president, then you would wait. January 20th comes around. Your first order of business is get them. You've actually said that. And I believe that when somebody says something often enough, you should take them at their fucking word. Or like some people say, if somebody keeps telling you who they are, believe them. And that's what he's done. And the people around him, like I said, they get so emboldened. That's why at that same rally, you know, you've got people just screaming and yelling about how Kamala Harris is a communist and, you know, she's going to destroy American democracy. Then we have the infamous Puerto Rico comment from Tony Hinchcliffe, supposed comedian, where he says that, you know, the floating island of garbage in the ocean is called Puerto Rico. And that was, I'm going to be honest with you guys, that was probably the tamest statement that he made the entire time. If you absolutely cannot help yourself and you have to go see it, like I knew I was going to have to watch this horrible bile try to find a more, how do we put this? Try to find a news outlet or a video outlet that provides that source. It's a little bit closer to your own personal views. Don't go to Fox News to watch this shit. You know what I mean? Don't give them any more airplay. Go to some place where you can actually watch this. As much as you're going to hate what you hear, if you're a decent person anyway, watch this on a network that actually is worth giving your time and your views to so that they can generate ad revenue for that. That would be great. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing of, you know, him pointing into the audience, there's my black friend, kind of echoing Trump's, there's my African-American, like he owned this nigga. Hinchcliffe goes, there's my African-American friend. There's my black friend. We had a great time because we're getting ready for Halloween. We carved watermelons together. Yeah, he said that shit. He said that shit out loud with his whole chest. And now, what you may not know about Tony Hinchcliffe is he runs an amateur night kind of round table or like improv kind of thing called Kill Tony. I've never found Tony Hinchcliffe to be particularly amusing or funny. Some of the people who've been on the show Kill Tony are. And then I've started noticing that, you know, as much as I would give some people a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, because I think that comedy also earns a little bit of room because it is free speech. It's also performance art in a way. You have to be able to take some risks and say some things that are not necessarily, quote unquote, easily digestible for the general public, right? In order to take some swings, to get some laughs, maybe to point out a certain inequity or inconsistency that you see in the world, and maybe by using humor, bring it to light. Comedians, artists, musicians have to be given a certain little bit of leeway. Not saying just say whatever you want and be free from the consequences, but you have to give them a little bit of running room to say things that are going to challenge our thought processes, make us reconsider some of the ways that we've looked at the world or perceived ourselves or believed in X, Y, or Z thing to make their craft worthwhile and to have it continue to have merit in our society. That being said, there has to come a point where there is some accountability for the shit that you say. And I've started noticing, as much as people, and I was giving Joe Rogan a pass for a while because I was curious about how he ran his podcast. I liked the idea that he was willing to sit down and talk to and listen to anybody. And to kind of like get the meat and potatoes out of certain person's views, kind of pick them apart and get to learn about more about who they are. But as time has gone on, Joe Rogan has proved himself to actually really want and earn the frat boy voice that a lot of people have ascribed to him. You know, maybe in the first couple of years when he started the podcast, it wasn't so much so, but then I think post-pandemic, maybe it's because he's rich and maybe that's how rich people act sometimes. He's leaned so much further to the right that I'm starting to lose a lot of respect for him. Tony Hinchcliffe, like I said, was never really funny to me, but you know, he's had Joe on the show. He's had another comedian by the name of David Lucas. Double check to make sure I get the name right so we can point and laugh at the right person. Yeah, it's David Lucas. He's just this giant, and I don't mean giant in terms of hyperbolic. This is a big ass dude. He's just a giant marshmallow of a, in my personal opinion, dude's cooning a lot. And he's really caping for Trump in a way that like disturbs me. Like when I see blacks for Trump, when you're talking about blacks for Trump, women for Trump, how it looks like slugs for salt kind of thing. Yeah, I don't think that he realizes that the people who are really hardcore Trump supporters would probably drag him from the back of a truck if they felt like they could get away with it. There's a lot of racism that circulates throughout the MAGA camp. And I think that some people, like, they feel like maybe because they say the quote unquote right things, or they hit a couple of markers with a certain demographic, that means that they're included in that demographic. And that just isn't the case. That's not how that works. I've had people who are, you know, I've known who are hardcore Trump supporters and looked at them and be like, you know that you would swing if this was rewound back like 60 years, 70 years, and you try to be all buddy-buddy with them, they would hang you. You know that, right? The only reason they aren't doing it now is because everybody has a cell phone in their pocket. You know what I mean? That's how they caught the dude who leaned on George Floyd. You know what I mean? That's how they got the guy who shot Philando Castile. Like, that's because these things are more, not that they're more prevalent, they happen all the time, but these kinds of incidents of racial violence, especially politically motivated racial violence, are becoming more widely televised and widely discussed, and a brighter light is being shown upon them. It's because of the pervasiveness of, you know, cell phone technology, you know, police body cameras and things of that nature that capture these assaults and these kinds of incidents on camera for us to all pick apart. But Hinchcliffe and Company, I'd be very interested to see how long Kill Tony survives behind this. And I guarantee you there's going to be a handful of people who are going to think he was great. But I noticed when I listened to the video, when he mentioned Puerto Rico and that horrible comment, there were a lot of people there who were not thrilled about it. And here's how stupid this guy is. There's a tremendous population of Puerto Ricans that live in New York, and I don't know why, but for some reason, a lot of them support Donald Trump. And then you chose to insult them to their faces at a Trump rally. I mean, talk about not being able to read an audience, right? I don't know how to, you know, read the room on this one. Yeah, I guess from some estimates, there's approximately 600,000 Puerto Ricans that just call New York City home. So if any contingent of them decided to show up for this Trump rally, you pissed off a lot of people. And it's just, it's so dumb that you would make that statement, but couldn't help yourself, could you? Had to try to get in with the Führer. Ugh, so disgusting, so despicable. And I know that we're going into the election tomorrow. I'm going to be heading over to the polls to vote. Like I said, things got a little carried away. Couldn't quite do it this week. But I just want you guys to take a little bit of solace in a couple of things. One, well, not solace, but also like a little bit of information away from this. One of the things that we've heard somebody mention before is Trump was mentioning being able to use the Alien Enemies Act to deport persons that he thought didn't deserve to be here, right? Yeah. The problem is that this is an old wartime act. This, I think, actually, if I'm not mistaken, I could very well be. Let me just take a look here. Yeah, I was right. This predates the Civil War. This particular act predates the Civil War by almost 70, 80 years. So this is old stuff that was on the books. Essentially, what it allows is a wartime authority. So it has to be under the context of war. That allows the president to detain or deport natives and citizens of an enemy nation. So what he's saying is illegal aliens who come to the United States, or just people who are not of American, you know, are not naturalized American citizens, can be deported to their home country. And it has been used in several instances against people who've done absolutely nothing wrong. And how do we know that that's happened? Because it's been used three times since its enactment in major conflicts. During the War of 1812, World War I, and World War II. But the law was actually behind a lot of detentions, deportations and expulsions, and even restrictions on the movements and the livelihoods of German, Hungarian, and Japanese and Italian immigrants, based only on the fact that they were not natural born American citizens. This is also the reason for the Japanese internment camps during World War II, which some of you may remember the wonderful George Takei of Star Trek fame has done. I think he's written a book about his life in the internment camps. And if you want to read some really heartrending shit, go and check that out. But this is what Trump wants to be using against Americans. And even if he does get a couple, let's say he manages to get like, let's say 70% of the immigrant population is part of the people who get kicked out. Innocent people get caught in the fray all the time. You know what I mean? There are children. There are people who just kind of look different. We've seen that happen before where a United States soldier who was naturalized and wasn't maybe a born citizen, but became naturalized and fought for the United States military in Iraq, ended up getting himself deported. a soldier, like a veteran. They just sent him away. You know, they're like, oh, but he was a bad guy. Yeah, before he joined the military. He joined the military, cleaned his act up, got his shit together, had a little trouble, got out. He's like, you know what? I'm going to keep my shit on the straight and narrow. And then they like got caught in a sweep and got kicked the fuck out. Wouldn't take a lot. And it doesn't really take a lot for people to like forget that when they start picking at other people's rights and, you know, their abilities, they just get one step closer to you. You know, you might be like, oh, well, I don't have to worry about Roe v. Wade because I'm not having no abortions. I ain't got no kids. Maybe I'm a dude. You know, maybe I just decided that I'm not going to have kids, whatever. There are so many more broader reaching implications behind Roe versus Wade in terms of how the law is applied and how it protects the health of not just women, but people of all stripes. And to ignore people the ability to just have agency over their own bodies. I don't give a damn how you feel about abortion. I don't give a fuck what your legal or your moral or your religious arguments are. Nobody else should have the right to tell you what you're doing with your own body. That is a discussion between you, your doctor, and the Lord. That's it. Nobody else should have the right to tell you what you can and cannot do. You are going to live with the consequences of that decision. I am not. But if I decide for you that you have to do something because it makes me feel bad, then I am taking on responsibility for your choices as well, because I've taken away one of them. That's the logical argument here, is if you're going to have this happen, well, then guess what? That means that you're also going to have to sign on for the care of this child. You're going to have to sign on for the housing and, you know, the feeding of this child. You decided to be pro-life. That's great, and I get it. I respect that. That means we have to be pro-life all the time, not just until the moment they come out into the world. That means we have to be pro all these lives. You want to talk about all lives matter? Let's talk about those lives. How much do they matter? Or do we just not give a fuck about them until we can send them off to war or tax them? Is that when we start caring? How much of the you know, Christian values that, like, the more modern, you know, conservative folks are trying to espouse, how much of those are being represented in making these laws and making these decisions? How much of that was working behind the Supreme Court when they decided to strike down Roe v. Wade? How much of that was there? I wanna know. I wish I could find like a barometer so I could find like the percentage of how much of that Christian thinking was behind making that decision for other people. I don't think it was there. And you know what? I'm pretty sure I'm not wrong. But that's what they think. That's how they act. And then because they think and act on all this wild shit, that was when Trump and Johnson were talking about this whole thing. We have a little surprise that we're going to use. I was reading about this because I had heard about this before, but I had forgotten it because it'd been so long since somebody brought it up. And like, this doesn't happen much at all, does it? No, it does, but just not very often. There's a thing that's called a contingent election. This was that little trick that Johnson, that Speaker Johnson and Trump were talking about back and forth, was basically just this idea that if neither of the candidates who are up for election hit 270 electoral votes, right? It's a fallback process created by the 12th Amendment where the House of Representatives gets to select the president and the Senate would get to select a vice president. Now, why is this interesting, you ask? Very, very good. Very good. I'm glad you're here. This gets interesting for a couple of reasons. The truly screwy and scary thing about it is that at present, in what's now known as the 118th Congress, Democrats hold 51 seats and Republicans hold 49. So it's pretty, pretty tight. So that means that, you know, if these elections don't swing a little bit harder towards the Democratic side, or maybe even a more independent side, they would have a vote as well. They'd have a voice as well. You could end up seeing Republicans in the House and the Senate both deciding who gets to be the president of the United States. That was the idea anyway. That was kind of what they were going for. And it's just kind of interesting that that was what was going down, because it's like, oh, if this is going to happen, how are you supposed to make an end run around it? They're like, I know, we'll use a contingent election. It's crazy, though, because there's a lot more at stake here than just that. Let's see, we'll look at this. The West Virginia seat of retiring Senator Joe Manchin, a longtime Democrat who became an independent, is likely to fall under Republicans. Democrats may need to run the table in the other battleground contest just to keep 50 seats, a bare majority only if Democratic nominee Kamala Harris also defeats former President Donald Trump for the White House, as vice president will break ties. Interesting, huh? Interesting. So there's like there's ways that this doesn't actually go off, but it's scary to think that these people are thinking about how to again, while they complain about, you know, voter fraud and all this stuff, they're trying to find ways to put an end run around the election if they don't like the results. Just the sheer idiocy behind like them. It's not idiotic that they're attempting it, but just like the lunacy behind thinking, you know what? It's like very Gargamel from the Smurfs kind of thinking. I'm going to turn Smurfs into gold. Well, if I don't get the results that I'm looking for, I'll just cheat. The very same thing you've been accusing Democrats of all this time is the exact same thing you want to do. And it's okay if you do it, though, because it works for you, right? Right? Do you see the hypocrisy here? As long as I get what I want, who gives a fuck what I do and how I get it? Now, if you're following with that kind of logic, the real stupid thing about it is, let's say it doesn't work. Let's say you do get the election. Let's say you get Donald Trump and J.D. Vance for the next 4 years, and they bumble and stumble fuck their way through the next 4 years. Let's say you get the Republican majority in the House and Senate, and that sits for a little while. They start enacting all these weird powers and bizarre, you know, cadres and stuff like that. Like, we want to do these amendments and make this happen. We get rid of these people, get rid of those people. Guess what? That doesn't just go away when they lose their seats. That means you left it in place for the office of the presidency in perpetuity, which means that the next time around, a Democratic president could go, you know what? I didn't like the way those guys treated me. Kill them. I'm sorry, what? Yeah, you know, they were so adamant that we have this power while I'm the president now. Fuck them. Get rid of them. How would that be? To have those guys lined up in front of a firing squad. But, yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing. Because Democrats and at least more center and center left leaning people and even center right generally tend to be fairly decent human beings and don't want to see acts of violence committed against American citizens in the name of somebody's political party or their ideology, that would probably not happen. But you never know. What if you get some vindictive motherfucker who's like Donald Trump but on the other side of the spectrum? Well, we've created ourselves quite a conundrum, haven't we? Now we've given somebody who's just as unhinged, but in the opposite direction, the door swings the other way this time. Now they're the crazy one that's in power. Now they're the one with their finger on the button. Now they're the one that has the ability to use the United States military to go after political opponents. How's that feel now? Now that the shoe is on the other foot, fits a little tight, don't it? But that's what these fucking dummies don't think about. And you know why they don't think about it? Because they're too busy thinking about other shit that absolutely is not smart at all. And I'm going to close with this story of just how, well, I'm not closed necessarily, but I'm going to get to how leaning so hard in a certain direction, and especially being a single issue voter, is a very dumb, stupid, and scary thing to happen. So, scrolling through Facebook, and I saw a post on a friend's page that said, the people who are looking to take away your guns are the same ones who killed a squirrel and a raccoon. Now, at first glance, you're like, this person's obviously lost the plot. You know, their elevator doesn't go all the way to the top floor. What does that have to do with anything? So I did a little digging, didn't take long before I found out about this interesting story. And hopefully you guys will walk with me for a minute. So this happened in New York State. Not New York City necessarily, but this man had taken in an orphan squirrel and made it into like a social media darling, you know? Oh, look at this cute little squirrel. This man saved and whatnot. And, you know, he was like, yeah, I really wanted to take the squirrel in, raise it as a pet, you know, kind of help rehabilitate the thing. And he also took in a couple of other animals, including a raccoon. I think it was named Fred. The squirrel's named Peanut. And it's just an adorable little, you know, little heartfelt kind of story about about how, oh, look at how adorable this little Eminel is. Yay, look at it having such a fun little life. But on the 30th of October, the Department of Environmental Conservation took the squirrel and also the raccoon, Fred the raccoon, from this guy's home. His name is Mark Longo, near the Pennsylvania border in Pine City. And then the Department of Environmental Conservation and the Chemung County Health, Department of Health confirmed that they had euthanized both animals because they said that there's a potential for human exposure to rabies. It said a person involved with the investigation was bitten by the squirrel, so to test it for rabies, they had to kill him. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, we got to make sure they're dead first, then we could check them for rabies. But if we did, if they don't have rabies, oops, it's just dead animal. Ah. It's boneheaded caveman logic in the first place. You know what I mean? But that's how they got to do it, I guess. So that's at least the hill they were willing to die on. When it came to the official response from both of these agencies, that's what they wanted to do. It's bizarre to me that the science and technology hasn't progressed enough that we can test for rabies in a live animal. But apparently, because the sample sites that you need, samples that you need to test for rabies are so massive, it would kill the animal anyway to test for rabies. So instead of having an affected person get a rabies shot, or maybe just taking the animal and quarantining it, or I don't know, maybe setting it loose and only destroying the animal if it exhibits symptoms of rabies, they just like, fuck it, better safe than sorry, and they killed him. Now that's a terrible thing to do to somebody who's been taking in an animal, who took in an animal and is taking care of it, nursing it back to health, who's obviously dealing with this animal on a day-to-day basis and is not showing any signs of rabies themselves, nor are the other animals showing any signs. They just made this unilateral decision to take this man's animals and kill them. That is a terrible, terrible, terrible thing to do. And I feel bad for this guy, and I feel bad for the animals because they didn't do anything wrong. But to somehow politicize this and turn it into a they're coming for your guns argument might be one of the most insane, like in the terms of mental gymnastics, like we were talking about, this might be one of the most insane leaps I've seen. Because it's not like the squirrel and the raccoon, as I said to the person I responded to, it's not like they had their own Ruby Ridge situation going on where they kept a bunch of, like, you know, 22s and, you know, 38s in their, you know, in their nests and were shooting at random people who were walking by, and the ATF had to go in there and, you know, burn the entire apartment down just to be sure. No, they were just two innocent animals. They could have easily talked with this guy. You know what I mean? Like, hey, man, you could get your rabies shots for these animals so we don't have to fucking kill them. They didn't. And it's terrible that that happened. But it had nothing to do with guns. And then they were like, well, you know, New York State has the most aggressive laws. You know, one of the states with the most aggressive laws when it comes to firearms. And every time they make a different law and it doesn't work, they make an even more horrible one that tells us that we can't have our guns. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, you know what? I want you to hear what you're saying to me. The Department of Environmental Conservation is the department that actually is in charge of issuing hunting licenses that you pay for with your money dollars, and you go hunting with your guns. So you're telling me the department that makes its money off people having guns is trying to take away the guns? Like, do you see how that doesn't quite balance? That the center of that argument doesn't hold at all. Because here's the thing. You have to remember this. No matter where you go, no matter what you do, no matter how you live, if your government is funded by money, they will do what they have to get the money. If it doesn't matter who they have to cater to, doesn't matter how they have to bend, twist, break, in some cases, the laws or even their own principles, they will do what they have to do to get that bag. That's just simple. It's how politics works. It's how governments work. It's just one of those things that's a very core basic tenet of, you know, human existence. So if you think that they're going to take away the guns from everybody in the state of New York, and they're just going to be like, okay, here's my guns, without having a serious reaction to it, possibly a catastrophic one, you are insane. And if you think for some reason that the Department of Health, and again, like I said, the Department of Economic Conservation, which makes money off selling hunting licenses, is running an anti-gun campaign, I've got a bridge for sale for you. But here's the other problem that I have with that whole argument, right? This should be pretty obvious, but I'm going to say it just in case. Sharing that kind of bizarre logic only serves to fan the flames for the people who oppose your stance on the Second Amendment and gun ownership. Because what they're going to say is, how insane are these people that they think that like these two departments are trying to take away their guns? And so somehow that means that they killed a squirrel and a raccoon to, I don't know, show their muscle. These people are clearly insane because they believe this. They believe that these departments, you know, are killing the squirrel and the raccoon. And they're also trying to take away the guns. How do those things even connect? How did you draw that line between those two points? These are insane people. We don't need them to have guns because they're insane and they think and believe stuff like this. So when you share a story like that, it actually makes you look like a bigger fool, because now they're like, maybe it was just a couple of, you know, right-wing conspiracy nuts who are all in the 2A camp. And they're like, oh, no. More and more of these people are sharing these stupid thoughts and ideas. So that means that it must be way more of them who think this way than we thought. Now we really got to get the guns. You see what I'm saying? It just, you haven't served your purpose at all. If anything, you shot yourself in the foot, pun intended, by spreading this kind of stupidity and, you know, continuing to espouse it. You make yourself and other people who are decent, you know, decent Americans, law-abiding citizens, just like to have a gun for maybe home protection, maybe just like to shoot for sport, maybe actually do hunt. You know what I mean? You've painted them in a negative light by sharing this kind of stupidity. This absolute bananas theory that you've espoused now is making everyone else look bad. And you've hurt the entire movement as a whole. And since you don't understand how much of a disservice you've done, you've got no concept that you're also now you're on the list of people that we don't want to have guns. Your fellow Second Amendment supporters are like, yeah, I don't want this nutbag to have a gun either. Look what he said. He actually thinks this is real? Yeah, I don't want you to have a gun. Absolutely not. Why should I trust you? You don't know how to make the simple cognitive leaps to get between these two statements and go, oh yeah, this is stupid. No one's doing that. You couldn't pull that off. I did that with literally a 15-second Google search. I was like, oh yeah, this got to be bullshit. Like, look around. Like, why would they do anything to hurt themselves making money? And then why would you automatically assume that because they did this, all of a sudden this is the thing? I really wish I could understand the mind of somebody who thinks that way and believes that, but you can't. You can't. And that's the thing that makes some of these people, especially the more conservative and bizarrely conservative ones, very scary, is that they really truly believe this stuff and they hold dear to it too. It's such a precious part of their identity. And that's scary as fuck to me too. Anybody who makes a certain concept or ideology a part of their, like their, the linchpin of their identity, it can be very frightening to me. And it doesn't really matter what it is. It could be, like I said, it could be the Second Amendment. It could be veganism. It could be your religious preference. It could be that Star Wars is better than Star Trek. When that becomes your identity and you've centered yourself around that and nothing else can reach you or touch you or, you know, engage with you on any reasonable, rational level, you become very dangerous. You become very terrifying to not just myself, but other people, you know, in society. Because at a certain point, you will let that belief override your logic, your reason, your basic humanity, and it'll allow you to excuse yourself doing very horrible shit. You might not think it does today, but when the day comes, you'll probably be too far beyond the pale to realize it. And at that point, we're all screwed. I don't know. We'll see how it shakes out. We've got just about 36 to 48 hours to go before this season of America is over. And I'll be honest, just from the initial reporting, I'm hopeful, but I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily optimistic. about Harris's chances just because I've looked around and I really want to believe in the better nature of people, but I also believe like some of the things I've been talking about with friends and family. I think that maybe we didn't learn our lesson from the last time around with Donald Trump. And I think Donald Trump is now kind of becoming what's like a righteous punishment for America. Since America didn't learn her lesson the first time around, we're being sent Donald Trump again. And because these dummies won't get it, I think it's going to have to hurt a lot more people, a lot worse, before we're able to even remotely atone for the sins of this country. And I think maybe Donald, as much as I don't want to admit it, and I do always believe that, you know, these things do happen for a reason. And I think that the reason might be that we're stupid and we make bad decisions as a country. So maybe we're getting exactly what we deserve. Who knows? Maybe we'll dodge a bullet. And I don't say that Kamala Harris is going to be like the savior or anything like that. Maybe she'll end up being worse than Donald Trump. But at least she'll be a slightly more decent human being while she's, you know, screwing us to the ground if that's what she's going to do. Maybe we'll at least, you know, get taken out to dinner first before we're tortured and killed. Who knows? If you have any thoughts or opinions, remember again that you can always email me over at patreon.com/wanderingonestudios to talk to me, share your comments, your questions. If you want to share an opinion, ask for some advice, whatever it is, hit me up over there. You can catch me later today, hopefully, if I get things squared away, on Twitch at twitch.tv/linkib. And I'm going to see if I can get this XE box to work and maybe play some Switch games too. Like I said, I picked up a couple little treats and hopefully you guys will join me over there at twitch.tv/linkib to say hello and see what we got. And in the meantime, in between time, thank you also very much for your sponsorship. If you're over there, a patron on the Patreon page, that's awesome. I love you for it. Thank you as well for sharing this with a friend or family member or coworker. Thanks for listening and for following along with me. And don't forget, tomorrow's the day. Tomorrow's the big day. Go out and do the vote. And let's all cross our fingers and hope for a better outcome than the gloom and doomers might say that there is. Because I think that if enough of us decent Americans go out and take the vote and vote for decency and humanity and fairness, I think that we can see at least a slight shift in the winds. But who's to say? I'm Link Flores. You guys are amazing. And I'll see you guys a little further down the road. And I'll join you for Morning in America on Wednesday, hopefully. In the meantime, in between time, peace.